When I started rewatching 28 Days Later this morning, I started the film. I was like, you know, I'm going to do notes and watch it at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And I start watching it. I'm like, I don't remember this opening. What, you know, this, what's going
on
here?
It was
28 weeks later.
Oh, you're watching 28 weeks later?
I was like, wow, my memory is shot.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marcus, and Colin. Very happy to say that we're all here today, which means that Marcus joined us for the beginning of this podcast. Marcus, how's that feel for you? Good to see you.
It feels great. Glad to be here, guys.
You didn't have to run out and grab some last minute food or anything like that?
No. I may have to get, like, maybe I'll leave halfway through and get a coffee or something.
Okay. Yeah. Just whatever you need to do. Just
Marcus is going to go get some beer and some cleaning products.
Cleaning products. Well, at the end of today's podcast, Colin will be making his pick for our next movie. Colin, apparently, when he joined the podcast, had not made his decision as of yet. So, Colin, you have for the duration of the remaining podcast to come up with your next movie. Are you going to be able to do that?
I'm going to fumble it at the end. I got to say, 28 weeks later.
All right. Well, speaking of that, we are here for Marcus's pick, and that is 2002's, written by Alex Garland and directed by Danny Boyle, and it is 28 Days Later. So, Marcus, this was your pick. Why did you end up picking this particular movie?
I've seen it on, as we've been going through some horror movies, I've seen 28 Days Later listed on Horrorless. And I never really, I did remember, I wasn't sure if I watched it before, but I did remember once I got into it, I'm like, oh, I have seen this before. And I didn't think it really was a horror movie, but I thought it fit more with our general. We just recently did Dread, and it was written by Alex Garland. So this came up again, so I wanted to check it out, revisit. It was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good rewatch.
Yeah, so just by way of general introduction, so this was a 2002 release in Britain. Didn't end up hitting the US box office until the year 2003. For the 2003 box office, it ended up coming in at number 65, so it made $45 million. Made a total of $85 million worldwide on a budget of only $8 million. So definitely a success. And it maintains a 7.6 rating on the IMDb.
Bravo awarded it the 100 spot on their list of the 100 scariest movie moments.
Yeah, I didn't.
Did they mention what the particular moment is? Because I don't think this movie is particularly scary.
Yeah, and that's what I saw it on the list because we were looking for scary movies for the Friday Night Frights podcast. This has shown up on it, and I did not find it scary at all. There's some you know, dramatic scenes or like violent scenes.
This isn't really even a horror movie or a zombie movie for the most part.
No. I mean,
well,
they're in the background and it's the compelling event, obviously.
It's a horror movie. It's just like a lot of horror movies that we watched. It's not really that scary, but it's definitely the horror genre. Now, whether or not it's a zombie movie, you know, I think Danny Boyle and Alex Garland, well, at least Danny Boyle doesn't really consider it a zombie movie, right? It's more like a pandemic type movie. I think Alex Garland probably does think it's a zombie movie because he was inspired by zombie movies, and specifically like Resident Evil, the video game. So I consider it a zombie movie.
But how do you define a zombie? Do they have to be undead? Because they are not undead.
All right. Well, it's a zombie-like movie.
Yeah. Zombie-ish? Zombie-ish. Well, and apparently they used Ebola as the footprint for the disease, right? So the way that it shows up in terms of the, you know, the bleeding in the eyes and the vomiting of blood, all that. So they used kind of Ebola as a baseline for what this thing could be.
Yeah, I read that they kind of wanted to make a zombie movie, but they thought the zombies of old, which were the creatures feasting on brains. They were born out of like nuclear scare and nuclear attack. And so zombies previously were these man-eating, brain-eating creatures, and they thought that was a little bit outdated. And so they wanted to update and kind of modernize the zombies to something that's a little more fearful for the day and age. And so that's where they picked the Ebola and then like Mad Cow and some other bioterrorism scares were going across the UK. So that's when they ended up.
Yeah, I think it works really well. I think the overall effect in terms of the kind of, so rage is the disease as it's known within the movie. And I do like the fact that it energizes the people that, you know, contract it, right? So they're going crazy and they're running. So they're coming after you really fast. Apparently also Danny Boyle specifically cast athletes in for all the roles of the infected. So when you see the people that are running, they actually got people that were really in great physical shape so that they could, you know, have the appearance of moving quickly and moving skillfully and even though they're kind of crazy. And I think actually the kind of the zombie effect in this movie is done really well. I think there are several scenes where you see them kind of running towards you and sometimes it starts in silence and all of that I think is really effective. And the makeup effects of the infected I think is also, it's done really well. So I think it works.
Yeah, it's also quite different than like say George Romero's zombies, which are like slow moving and like unrelenting, kind of undead. Yeah. These are like just humans infected with the disease. They can be easily killed, so to speak.
Yeah, it's interesting because Colin and I just watched Army of the Dead, and so they have. It seems like the zombies are now speeding up a little bit because everybody's realized that the slow shambling zombie is not a threat.
These are 21st century zombies.
Well, so how about Danny Boyle? Just start there. So Danny Boyle as a director, what do you guys think of Danny Boyle? Is he someone that you seek out his films?
I don't know that I seek out his films, but I've seen many of his films and I like him as a director. This was not a movie that I would have expected from him because it is very more like the horror genre. But, you know, Shallow Grave was a very tense thriller.
Shallow Grave is a pretty intense movie. Like the scene where particularly where the roommates are discussing who's going to go take care of the teeth and all that. Like, that is some pretty, some dark shit. That and there are parts of Trainspotting too that are also, you know, pretty trippy, right? I mean, the baby obviously comes to mind.
The toilet scene.
Actually, I really liked Trainspotting a lot. So this, but still, I don't know if you're expecting like a horror movie, you know, from Danny Boyle. But
no, I wouldn't think so. I mean, not based on, you know, Shallow Grave and Trainspotting, right? You think you get something along the lines of like a almost like a Guy Ritchie vibe or, you know, something in that universe, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
That's funny you said that because I always confuse Danny Boyle and Guy Ritchie. Not, that's just because like Trainspotting and Snatch both came out similar times and kind of similar vibes or what.
Yeah, did you guys see Yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, so a lot of people shit all over that movie. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it.
No, I thought it was much better than I expected because, yeah, I think people did shit over it and or shit on it. You know, shit on it or shit over it. I don't know.
So, somewhere there was some shitting taking place.
But yeah.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a nice movie. It wasn't like an amazing, great movie, but it's like a nice, fun, romantic comedy. Like,
yeah, no, man, I had heard really bad things about it, and so I was pleasantly surprised when we watched it.
Kind of a guilty pleasure.
Yeah. All right, so getting back to this movie, so 28 Days Later, you guys want to talk about the cast for a minute?
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy is the lead. He plays Jim. I was actually pleasantly surprised to see him show up in this movie because I'm definitely a fan of his and had forgotten that he was the lead in this. And I think he's really good. He has a nice kind of understated kind of intensity that's there and a little bit of vulnerability. I think he brings a good combo to the role.
He doesn't have some of that like sort of a weird off-putting histrionics that he's brought to some of his other roles that like in the Batman movies,
right?
Scarecrow,
kind of a different Inception character. Yeah, he's very understated in this role, and I really like him a lot. I think Danny Boyle wanted to hire some actors who were relatively unknown, and this is a really strong performance. I like it a lot.
Yeah, and apparently Ewan McGregor was actually offered the role first, but he had a falling out with Danny Boyle over something in relation to Trainspotting. I'm not sure what the issue was. They later reconciled, apparently. And then the film was actually offered to Ryan Gosling as well, but he turned it down.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, it was.
I don't think that would have worked at all.
No.
He's too...
What do you have you even been able to do the accent?
I'm not a Ryan Gosling expert, so I can't help you there.
But... Can you please call him up and ask him if you can do the
accent? You're having a strong reaction, so you have an opinion in that regard. Maybe you think it would not be the right fit.
Yeah. No. I mean, no. Ewan McGregor, I totally see.
Right.
But, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm going to go Cillian Murphy in this. He's great.
Yeah, no,
he's great.
He's really good. So then you have Naomi Harris. So she plays Selena. Most recognizable recently probably from the Bond films. So she shows up as, she's the Moneypenny, the kind of the modern or the more recent Moneypenny. I think she's really good in this, and she definitely brings, you know, she shows up and she has a real kind of hard edge to her. Her character does. And apparently she had to, in the earlier version of the script, they had a scene where her mom got infected and her mom was trying to kill her little brother. And so she had to kill her mom. And then what she didn't realize is that her little brother was also bitten. And so she then had to kill her little brother. So that's the backstory of her character as to why she's a little bit nihilistic, understandably so.
She's a bit of a hard ass for sure. Like, you would not want to cross her.
Yeah, but I like how her character develops over the course of the film and she sort of becomes more vulnerable and stuff. And you can see this happening, you know, like as they're getting away from the city and driving like up north and, you know, specifically when they're on the farm. It's really well done. I love Naomi Harris. She's really great.
Yeah. So then you have Brendan Gleeson, who plays Frank. And Brendan Gleeson, I think, is in every... He's probably in every British crime film, for sure. He shows up somewhere, right? He's played a lot of gangsters. Also played...
He's done it all.
Yeah, he's in everything. Look. And he's one of those guys that when he comes on the screen, it's like you instantly like him. It's just, He's so watchable. I just think he's a fun actor.
He's got a great presence.
Actually, the first movie I even noticed him in was Braveheart. He plays Hamish, who is, you know, Mel Gibson's right-hand man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I always liked him in you guys aren't a big fan of the Harry Potters, but he was Mad-Eye Moody in the Harry Potters.
Right. No, I've not seen all those.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Harry Potters either. But in Bruges, that's the one that actually I think of probably. He's also in Kingdom of Heaven.
Yep. Yeah, I just saw him in that.
All right. Anybody else you guys want to hit on the cast?
No.
Nope. All right. Well, you ready to jump into this thing? Start going through it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, just one thing in general. So it's interesting because Colin, I think you mentioned when you watched this on Hulu and you thought, oh, maybe the print, like the quality of the print wasn't that great.
Yeah.
I actually ended up renting it on Amazon Prime. And I had that initial same experience when when the movie starts. It looks a little grainy, looks a little different. And so what I didn't realize is this is actually the first movie that Danny Boyle shot all digitally a Canon XL1 camera. And he specifically chose that type of camera because he wanted to create this kind of a harsher look of the reality. So what you see in the movie in terms of kind of the overall aesthetic that gets created was specifically what Danny Boyle was going for when he chose to shot it digitally using these particular cameras. And it's interesting because when this movie starts, I get a real kind of late 70s sci-fi hit off of this movie.
It definitely feels like an older, I was thinking like early 80s. It has that kind of grainy.
There's like a Soylent Green, soft, kind of Logan's Run kind of vibe. The Andromeda Strain, like, oh, those are all movies that kind of jumped into my head when because the movie starts off and there's a lab sequence. And so people are breaking in to free some primates that are being, they're being experimented on. By the way, bad move because of ultimately what happens there. But
I don't care for it one way or the other. How about that? I see what he was trying to do, maybe, especially because, you know, society has broken down and, well, it's sort of like, well, we're, you know, I don't want to show it in this crystal clear digital format. I want to show it more of a grainy texture to it. And that's fine. I that's interesting because I did not get any sort of early decade, you know, 70s, 80s vibe off of this at all.
Oh, really?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I definitely did. So the group of activists break in and it's pretty funny because they're in there and they're documenting the monkeys and they're taking pictures. And this,
what's funny about that opening scene?
I think is funny is that there's a guy who shows up in a lab coat. One of the scientists, he's like, do not open the cage, do not open the cage. And then the person opens the cage. And the next thing you see is the monkey just like, and just attacks her. So, and then, yeah, things go bad from there.
World's dumbest animal activists. I mean, just what are you fucking doing? Are you that dumb?
What did they think they were doing? What type of testing they think was going on there, I guess, is the question.
I mean, they're basically like you break into this lab and there's these chimps who are undergoing some sort of a Clockwork Orange, you know, treatment with stimuli from violent movies and stuff. And they're quite clearly enraged in the cages. And you're going to basically let out these wild animals.
Right.
You're just asking for trouble, regardless of the fact that they've been infected. And then when the scientist says they're infected, it's like
infected and extremely contagious.
Highly contagious. Of course, then they're, I think one of the guys says, like, infected with what? At that point, cut to the chase. Don't beat around the bush. Well, it's the sort of thing that that makes them, let's just be like, with a highly contagious, deadly disease, and you will die within 20 seconds
to the scientist's credit, I think he says rage. Doesn't he, very dramatically, right?
So, what does that mean, though? Rage.
Let me ask you this. It's an emotion. So if there were two monkeys that were in cages, right? One was being tested on something that was called rage, and the other one had something that was called, I don't know, like cuddles. which cage are you going to open? Right? Do not open the rage monkey cage. Do not do it.
Who cuddles?
But also, the whole facility was pretty low security. There was like one guy in a lab coat. Like, I don't know. It seems like if they had a virus that could wipe out London.
Where are the spacesuits? That's what I want to know.
There's no, like, yeah, he wasn't wearing any, even the scientist wasn't wearing any, like, protective gear or anything.
What was the point of the experiment, too? What were they trying to do? In order to cure,
you must understand. He said something like that.
Right. That's exactly what he said. And now that's where I'm going, like, dude, cut to the chase. Okay. Like, they have human chimpanzee Ebola and you will die.
So they were developing an anger management drug? I mean, what was it they were actually working on?
No, I think that the disease got like discovered somehow in these chimps and they were trying to figure out what's going on was my kind of guess. Like they weren't manufacturing rage or they weren't like, it wasn't a lab created.
We all know what they were doing. They were trying to design super soldiers because everyone tries to design super soldiers.
It's always Weyland-Yutani, no matter what's happening. Well, anyways, it does not work out for the activists because they're all attacked. The other thing is, I can't remember if it sets it up here or if you have to wait till the attack at Jim's parents' house, but does it show that one of the guys gets, that he turns that quickly? I forget. Did they show
activist? The woman activist, she immediately got bit and then like within 5 seconds, she's spitting up blood.
Yeah. So that,
and then, of course, the animal rights activists who are, you know, they love animals. He immediately starts banging the chimp over the head, trying to kill it, which I thought was a great turn.
Yeah. It's like, oh shit. But yeah, I do think that the overall mechanics of the virus itself that they set up are actually really, that's interesting, right? The fact that you have this 20 or 30 second window and that's it. And then it's off to the races for you to be infected. It kind of makes sense in terms of saying, okay, well, how could this have spread so quickly? Because otherwise I think that you could probably control it. But I do think that it's a pretty effective mechanism.
Yeah, it's really good. And you see it immediately. And I think Selena says it later, like you've got 10 or 20 seconds. And, you know, that's what happened with Mark, you know, like Mark at Jim's house, you know, suddenly sees that he was bit. Was he bit or was he got blood in a wound? And it was just like, she just turns on Mark and all just starts hacking away at him.
Yep.
Like no hesitation.
That's a good moment. So getting back to after the lab escape, you know, there's a title card 28 days later, and this is where Cillian Murphy is waking up in the hospital. You know, kind of how he stayed alive and all that is interesting. Like, I'm not sure. He must have had a very large hydration bag or something that was attached to him to keep him alive. But
I was wondering that myself.
Somehow he stays alive. So for how long, we're not really clear.
I like to think that. You know, he was in a coma for 4 weeks and that the hospital probably didn't fall until like, you know, say, after three and a half weeks, and then he woke up, right? So he really, he probably had an IV bag, a good one to go for, you know, a few days.
Well, he slept through the apocalypse, so that's probably not the worst thing in the world.
Exactly. So I always think of that. It's very similar to Rick Grimes in The Walking Dead, how that one started. Again, he was like in a hospital, and then he like woke up, and it was too, you know, post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, world. It's funny you say that, because I thought about that, and I was thinking, wow, that seems like almost a direct ripoff of this movie. So I'm curious to know if The Walking Dead, if they intentionally are paying homage to this movie.
I don't know, because it's based on a comic book series. I don't know when that was written.
Yeah,
it's a great way to do it. You basically skip over all of the madness and the fall of society, and you wake up and it's suddenly desolation.
It's also really, nice. Really well it's done. A nice, you can explore with him, like, okay, what just happened and what's right. The world turned into? And as he walks through and discovers what's going on.
Where they film that is a real hospital, but it's only a real hospital Monday through Friday. And then they lend it out on the weekends for filming on Saturday and Sunday. And that goes to support the hospital. So like, that's kind of interesting.
That is interesting. They'll get hurt Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, what happens to all the patients?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it's in maybe an urgent care, no overnight stay facility. I don't know.
So. Time to go home.
Just wheeling out the hallway. Hey, dude, we got a shot.
We got to get surgery.
Here. No, it's 5 o'clock. Got to go.
Come on, we got cameras coming in here. Let's go. Move it.
But then, so Jim is out wandering the city, and of course, everybody's gone. Another question here, right, which is, wouldn't there be more bodies on the street? You know, why are there no bodies there? So that, I don't quite get that, but some of these opening shots.
Yeah, there's a couple of spots with the bodies, and also like when they're leaving out of town, there's like no cars or anything like that. It was a little too empty in a few moments. But
yeah, but I thought this was really, really interesting. I mean, first of all, I think this is like probably the one thing I think of most when I think about this movie.
Oh yeah,
is this complete the empty streets of London, the empty highways. It's really, really well done. But yeah, I was sort of thinking about, well, other movies in the genre, and you see like specifically like on the highways, you know, they're just choked with all these abandoned vehicles.
Right. Whereas in this movie, trying to get out of town and stuff.
There's like, they're just completely empty. The streets are completely empty of people. And I think it's really, really interesting way to do it.
It's a great effect. I mean, those shots are amazing, yeah. Actually. I mean, they do, and they mentioned how they did it in terms of they had an hour, sometimes 2 hours between 4 and 6 a.m. And so that's when they were doing all the shooting. And apparently, Danny Boyle had good looking girls to go ask some of the drivers that were coming back from the clubs if they could just, oh, please wait, don't go this way, that sort of thing, to kind of just, you know, distract the drivers and keep them from driving into the shot. So,
I think it's totally effective. And to Colin's point, like, that is what I remember. Like, that's when I saw those scenes. I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen this movie before. Like, those are the scenes you remember of this just like emptiness and this kind of solitude that they establish. And just the music goes along with it too. And
he's going across the bridge and you see, you know, with Big Ben behind him, it's an iconic shot. I mean, it's really,
yeah, it's really cool.
So anyway, so Jim is out wandering around. He has a couple encounters with some of the infected.
When he gets to that one, the message board, and they had like all the missing people and all of this. Did you see there was one drawing of a child's drawing, and it had the had a drawing of like the dad coming home and like shooting up the family.
Oh no, I did not see that.
I forgot what it said on it too. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, like this total disturbing child drawing of like dad shooting up the house.
I remember when dad cleansed the infected of our family.
I don't know what's worse, that or like waking up after 28 days in a coma and the first thing you're so, so thirsty. And the first thing you get is like a warm Pepsi.
A warm Pepsi.
Like, oh.
I know, he needed a Rondo.
Yeah.
Something lightly carbonated so we could slam it down fast.
Love the Rondo.
The other thing I like when he's walking around is he walks into that one stairwell and there's a just spray painted on the wall. The end is extremely fucking nigh. I think that's pretty funny.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was good to see. Yeah. So Jim ends up, he encounters Selena and, I'm sorry, what's the name of the other guy?
Mark.
Mark.
Selena and Mark. And Jim wants to go find his parents to make sure you know, because of course he's getting caught up on the whole situation. And then so he ends up traveling with Selena and Jim to his parents' house, and he finds his parents dead in bed. They decided that they ended up killing themselves with what appeared to be pills, wine, and were those cherries? Just cherry pits sitting there? What were those? I was a little confused on the nightstand.
I don't know, but I guess they went out in style. Let's have a party. we'll drink a fifth of scotch, down a lot of pills, and just have drift off.
And just drift away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they did have a note that they left for their son, which was that, you know, they left him in the hospital and they were going to join him. They left him sleeping and they were going to join him in sleep. So,
right. And we hope you never wake up. It's like,
yeah. I like the touch of don't wake up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then why would you write him a note that says that?
Well, just in case.
Yes. And while they're at the parents' house, this is where you actually have one of the attacks from the infected. And I like how they stage these attacks, or it's a kind of a repeated theme where all of a sudden, like, something shows up and it's moving fast. And, you know, because all of a sudden they just come through the window and...
crashing through the doors, yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, and I like the intensity of that. I mean, I think it's really effective. You know, so they get into the fight. Mark has a bunch of blood splashed on him and he's cut. And this is where, you know, you just see Selena's just not fucking around because, you know, she looks at him. He doesn't even confirm that he's been infected, but... She makes the decision that he has been infected and then just hacks him to death with a machete just right then and there.
Yeah. Oh, poor Mark. He knew it was coming. But, you know, so you got Jim, who's like a total newbie, right? I like the idea of he doesn't quite follow the rules or he doesn't quite understand the rules. And so that's what brought on, you know, the infected crashing through the doors. And then after she dispatches those two, the first thing she says to Jim is like, were you bitten? Any blood in the mouth? And it's just like, what the what? And then you see Mark and he's obviously cut and she just goes to town on him.
Yep.
You're like, so I guess that's how this is going to go.
She's very pragmatic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's totally effective how they introduce Jim to the apocalypse and the kind of story.
Well, so from here, so, you know, Mark's gone. Selena and Jim keep traveling. They see up on one of the high-rise buildings that somebody has some lights that are blinking. So they decide that...
Are they blinking and flashing?
Blinking and flashing.
Were they flashing? Were they blinking in sequence?
And they're... Make them blink in sequence. Anyway, so they then go to that same building and they travel up the stairwell. And there's another cool effect where they're going up the stairwell and the infected show up and the infected are running up the stairwell and they're trying to stay ahead of them. And then at the top, they meet somebody who is dressed in kind of riot garb. And this is Frank. And this is where he blocks the infected and keeps him from, you know, killing him. I do like that whole scene. I think the way that it's shot with the stairwell and the camera looking down and the infected running up and all that, and you can see them at different levels. I think that's pretty, really effective. I think that's a cool shot.
I love when Frank shows up because it's sort of like, you were not expecting to see this guy in all this riot gear who looks like some sort of like warrior god all of a sudden saving you. And you're like, whoa, what the hell? What is going on here?
And I love the transition. Like he gets inside, takes it off. It's like, hey, how you doing? I'm Frank.
I know. Exactly. That was actually
a nice guy.
Yeah. He's so welcoming and homey. And
yeah. Yeah. Let's get a drink.
Which is like a far cry from other, you know, movies or shows in the genre where when you meet like another human, it's, you know, you're very standoffish and, you know, they're a threat to you.
Right.
And he's just like welcoming. He's like, more people, you know, like, come in.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that because I had that same sort of initial reaction, which was I didn't trust him right away, right? And because having not seen this since it probably first came out, I was not, you know, didn't remember it. So I was kind of, you know, I was questioning his motives. But then, yeah, sure enough, he ends up being this really nice guy. The other thing I really like about this whole sequence is he talks about the fact that, so they don't have water. They don't have water to flush the toilets. They don't, you know, have water to brush your teeth. And it cuts to him and they go up to the roof where he's trying to collect water via rain. And what he has is just, you know, hundreds of buckets all over the roof. And he talks about the fact that he's trying to, you know, set up some plastic sheeting because there's a way to catch condensation and generate water. But I just like the fact that it's realistic, right? I mean, it's some guy, he's not a survivalist, right? So he doesn't know how to fix everything, run everything. So he's just got a bunch of buckets up on the roof to try to catch rainwater because what else is he going to do? So I really like that part of it because it's kind of thinking about yourself in the situation. I'm not a survivalist expert, right? So I'd probably be trying to figure shit out too. And yeah, let's go catch some rainwater on the roof. I think that's just, I like that. That was a good touch.
I figure if you're trying to catch some water, you know, London's probably a good place to do it.
Right.
Yeah, California, not so much.
Yeah. No. Yeah. He did mention that it had been 10 days since they had received rain in London. And so that was a problem.
Aspect, the 28 days part, like it seems so, it's interesting that they picked it because obviously it's a very conscious decision. The movie's called 28 Days Later. But the just how much things are like balanced or like how quickly things can go like completely out of sorts. Just in 28 days, it's like, okay, all of London's like wiped out and people have had to like cope with this. It seems like it's more of a, I don't know, 6 months later or something, like years later or something like that.
Well, given the speed of infection, I can totally see that.
It's just kind of interesting because I think they do have this like kind of deeper message within the movie about like rage in society.
We're close from, you know, utter apocalypse, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Right, like in just 28 days. Apart. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like in just 28 days, this could happen. Like it's kind of terrifying though, considering we've gone through a pandemic of sorts. Well,
so this is an interesting point because, you know, what if coronavirus, you know, had been something like more like Ebola in terms of the deadliness. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, COVID spreads like very quickly, you know, if you're not taking any precautions, that would just, I can't even imagine. I mean, that was the nightmare, you know, is that, you know, something like Ebola gets unleashed and then what, society might be falling apart, you know. They might have to drop a fuel air bomb over Oakland.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where the fact that a disease could be that deadly and act that quickly, and that's the counter to COVID, which is a slow incubation and you can affect people without knowing it. That's the reason it spreads so quickly. If you like a disease that infects you within 10 to 20 seconds, you can tell it's not going to spread it'll spread rapidly, but it could be contained.
But can it?
Well, so let me ask this. What percentage of the population do you think escaped versus succumbed to the infection?
It's hard to say. It seems like 90% got infected because there wasn't that much outside of London.
Yeah, but the bodies, there are no bodies anywhere. So I was kind of wondering about that. Because
but there were like bodies in the church. Like they're just all piled up in the church.
Yeah.
They're probably like indoors. Maybe, you know, you go into a hibernation stage.
I forgot what they said about Manchester, because they said like majority of Manchester got a...
Well, Manchester was just like...
Manchester was burning.
On fire. It was just a conflagration.
But I think the guy, the soldiers did mention about like how many people tried to get out and they ended up getting just trapped.
And over the course of the film, between Alex Garland and Danny Boyle, they weren't clear on what direction they wanted to go in terms of saying that this got out globally or became something that was contained to the UK. And apparently, so I haven't seen the sequel. I haven't seen 28 Weeks Later, but apparently the sequel picks up and I guess what they've done is they've quarantined the UK. So it's not as if it was a global. Is that true, Colin? Because I think you at least watched the first part of it, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And that's the good thing is that, you know, like Britain is an island. So it's not like it can just, you know, spread across the land.
Right.
But they did say like...
they mentioned Paris at one point.
Selena had said there were reports of infection in Paris and New York. And I'm going like, well, what happened? Like, if that's true, that's really, really bad. But how could it have happened? You know, like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think you like rage.
Exactly. No. You're not getting on the airplane with rage.
So that's what I'm saying. I think it would be contained to a certain degree. Like, it's a lot easier than like, say, COVID.
I think it would spread very quickly. But again, if you're like on an island like Britain, you could contain it. But you know, you got to sacrifice Britain.
Yeah, that's containable in the global sense, not necessarily in the, like, talent sense.
I do have one question, though. Why don't the infected attack each other? Because if they're just mindless rage, right, it should be, there's something in front of me and I want to attack it.
I don't know, Dave.
Yeah. too good of a question.
All right, well, getting back to the progression. So when they're up in Frank's place... So Frank has a radio and he hears there's a repeated beacon saying that if you come to this blockade, certain place, you know, close to Manchester, they have a solution or a cure for rage. They don't say cure, but they have a I forget what they call it. Whatever it is.
I don't remember. An answer?
Yeah, an answer for rage, I think. And so they decide they're going to make
it's called love.
So they decide they're going to make a run for it, and they end up, apparently Frank was a taxi driver, might have been a and so they're in a taxi, and they at one point they're driving along.
By the way, not the mode of transportation I would have selected if I
no, how about like go get like an country. Armored car or something like that?
Yeah,
or,
like you can find like a big 4x4 or something, right. But it's Frank's
you're,
taxi.
You're in London. So
it's kind of funny. I do like the choice, but it's not what I would have chosen.
Yeah,
so no, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
good jump room.
Yeah,
good storage, good trunk space.
Yeah,
maybe a large gas tank. I don't know.
My unanswerable question is, what's the meter reading at the end? Right? He starts the meter at the beginning.
Oh, he does start the meter. You're right.
I'm gonna say 600 pounds.
Well, and they're driving, and at one point they have to make a decision which way are they gonna go, and they have a choice to go down through a tunnel or go the long route. They end up going through the tunnel.
Have they never ever seen like a horror movie or anything? I mean, this is like one.
Jim
of
knew.
Dumbest.
Jim's like, no, I know.
Jim
no.
knew. Yeah, Jim. Yeah. Jim was saying, let's not go. He's in like,
this is the worst idea ever.
Do yeah. not read the Latin.
Yeah, I really don't understand. It's like, what are you doing? Like this, you're taking these really bad, unnecessary risks.
Well, and there is a sort of an interesting. So somehow Frank is able to drive his taxi over a bunch of other cars to get through the tunnel.
If you had a 4x4 or something, I'd be like, well, okay. You know, you roll into this dark tunnel and then you see all these, you know, just a pile of cars. And at that point, you're like, okay, I was probably wrong. Let's just
turn around, go reverse,
yeah. turn around, go back. But no, it's like, hey, let's take our little taxi and try to like just roll over the top of them.
Yeah, so okay. So they get through. They end up popping a tire, and so this is actually I think one of my favorite sequences in the movie. So there's a moment of tension where they're trying to get the tire changed on the car, and as they're sitting there, they hear this noise, and then a whole bunch of rats come running towards them. And what they realize is that the infected are actually scaring the rats to run towards them, and so all of a sudden you see the infected show up. And I think that's a good tense moment where they're trying to time the getting the tire fixed before they get attacked or taken down by the rage zombies or the rage people.
Did the rats have rage?
Or was actually wondering about that. I was wondering if do the infected, did they try to kill anything? I mean, and
yeah, what, they did. I think affect other animals.
Certainly did in the primates.
Blood. Yeah. So I think the rats could have been, and that's actually how you get it off the island. Is like you have some rats with rage stowed away somewhere, like on a ship.
Well, I was thinking about if it could actually spread throughout the animal kingdom, that would be a real problem. You imagine like what happens when rage gets to the huntsman spiders in Australia?
Hey, man, we already did this, all right?
Don't they already have the rage?
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
How do you feel about rats? Like, are you I hate rats, or is it just like whatever?
I'm more sort of on the rats.
Yeah, me too. Rats don't really scare me. Some people are just like, they're creeped out by rats.
Yeah, they don't bother me until I open the laundry room door and one's sitting right there.
I know. It's more startling than anything else.
A
mouse jump on me from like inside our pantry, and that scared the shit out of me. So I have jumped, yes, but
did it? Was it?
It's more
with
startling
rage?
Than like a okay.
And I have cleaning two cats. Out a like I'm looking at my cats. Like, what the hell are you guys doing? Like, nothing.
Come on.
Not even earning your keep around the house.
You know, that's really bad. Because when we had some mice up in the attic, and then when we got Zelda, those guys are out of there. It's like, never heard them again. Your cats are lazy. But like if a thousand rats are running towards you, I might try get up to the high ground. But I'm not gonna like lose my shit. It's not like a thousand huntsman spiders like running towards me. At which point, I grab the pills and the fifth of whiskey and I crawl into bed.
Just back of the taxi. Just glug, 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 glug. See you on the other side.
Yeah.
All right. Well, getting back to the film. So they do get out of the tunnel, and there's one scene where they have to go gas up the taxi. And this is where Jim pops his cherry on zombie killing because I don't know why, but he goes to investigate. So they do stop at a grocery store at one point, and they load up on some food.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I really love the scene where there's no one else in the world, and you find like a store. It's just like pristine. It's not been ransacked. There's like everything you can imagine. And you just like go crazy.
Right.
Total shopping spree. It was also a little strange to see Cocoa Puffs and Rice Krispies in a British grocery store. But I mean, that's globalization, right?
Yeah,
but
the dystopian shopping sequence is always a lot of fun. So
yeah, it's really fun. I love how, you know, Jim's grabbing like some, you know, bottom shelf, you know, whiskey, and like Frank's like, no, what are you doing? Like he's going for the good stuff.
Well, and I do like it that initially, like Frank, he says, you know, you can't be grabbing that, and you're wondering if like there's a half second of like, oh, is Frank somehow, is this a morality thing? And then he's like, no, it's like go for the, this is the good stuff. So yeah, so then so Jim does have to he has to club a child to death who has a rage, and so when he's a little bummed out by that. By the way, that scene is another scene that I think is shot really well, because you see the kid like coming towards him and attacking him, and it's kind of running
totally silent,
running silently. Too. Yeah, like that's a really good effect. I think that was that's a pretty cool scene. I do like that whole middle sequence though, where they're on the road and they have the shopping experience, and they spend the night at one point in a. Where well,
it's nice. They lighten it up and they make it a little more humanistic, and it's a little more real. Like, right, Frank's like a little bit more.
Yeah, you kind of get reality. You get to know the characters a little bit.
Yeah,
it's like they're one big family out on a road trip.
Yes, it's very kinda. Sort of.
Kinda. Yeah, it's like vacation, right? It's very something.
Yeah, I actually really like this section too. I love seeing the shot of the car coming over the highway, and you've got the windmills in the background, and just these long shots of, you know, just desolate highway. And
So they're on the road and they get to where the blockade is. So where that they had the, by the way, you know, let's just be honest here. Repeated radio beacons in apocalyptic situations, they never lead to good things. Can we all agree for that? I mean, isn't it always somebody trying to pull you into a trap somewhere? Or even an alien, right? I mean, the alien's the ultimate future example of that. But, you know, if there's a repeated radio beacon, it's bad news on the end of it. Let's just admit it.
If you are on the other end, you're the one who's like originating the beacon, and you're serious and you want people to find you.
Yeah.
You know, don't be lazy. Maybe update it every day or two. Don't just like let the first one go over and over and over again.
So, you're saying like do like a daily apocalyptic podcast?
Sort of, yeah.
Hey, it's the DMC crew coming to you.
Because it Manchester. Makes people, then people will know that, you know, like, hey, you're still there. You're not, it wasn't, you know, a broadcast from weeks ago and now everyone's dead. Because that's what everyone else is thinking except for Frank. Frank's the only one who's holding out hope that there's someone still there on the other end.
What was the Sandra Bullock movie, The Bird Box? That they had the beacon, right, to come to.
Yeah, that one actually ended up being good.
Yeah.
So
yeah, there's so that one example. Did this stand have a beacon? Was that like they're all going to, or was that like the
that was a the psychic, devil was calling was a, them? A psychic draw to either Vegas or Colorado. So they get to the blockade. They don't find any soldiers when they first get there, and there is a moment where Frank is exploring one of the buildings, and he looks up just as a drop of blood falls from somebody, from one of the infected that is, I don't know what they're doing up there. They're either, they died up there. They're staked up there.
No, the bird that grabs them.
The crow is feeding off of the body of someone who had been infected. And
yeah.
But so this is like,
took some meat up there and was pecking at it. What bad timing, huh? You look up right where it drops into your eye.
That's why this scene is like really horrible, because they get there, they find this checkpoint, and there's no one there. It's totally deserted. You know it's where the broadcast was coming from. And Frank is just so dejected that, you know, he had so much hope, right, that they were going to find someone. And then he realizes that, you know, they're all dead. And then he sort of, you know, goes off and starts hitting things because he's really unhappy. And then, boom, a million in one shot, right in the eye, right? Yep. It's just, and then what happens right after, you know, he turns and then he gets shot and looks, the military is actually there. He was so close. It's really horrible.
Yep. He was that close. Although, What you, of course, find out is that the soldiers that are there are not there for purely altruistic means. So they do end up taking Hannah and Jim and Naomi back to, it's kind of Xavier School for the Gifted, something along those lines, like a large mansion or some sort of a school property. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but they're a group of soldiers. What was that?
It's like mansion. a mansion.
And so they've set up a perimeter.
They have those in England.
Yes,
I know. States.
I recall that. So you're introduced to Christopher Eccleston, who's Major Henry West. He's the guy who's kind of running the show. And then you have all these soldiers. And you immediately get the hit off of these guys that, there's always something a little bit off. There's always something a little bit off about these groups of military guys. This is another kind of somewhat standard trope here, right, where you end up having it's one of those things where it always starts off and they're very nice, and then you know that it's just covering up the fact that, there's bad things on the horizon.
It's like the strict rules of military etiquette are not quite being followed. And even though there is still some of that structure and regimented order, it's not quite, because, they're like in the trucks or the cars, and they're like, basically chasing each other in a big circle, right?
Right.
And it's like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's interesting because they have that scene and it makes you a little bit uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, this is not true military discipline. These are people that might be playing military instead.
Yeah, like I'd expect there to be like order and, hierarchy. And I mean, there is still some of that, but it's not like you walk onto like a military base and everyone's like buttoned down and, it's a little too chaotic. Loose. And
well, then also they show you like my moment where I'm like, oh, I don't trust this at all, is when he had the zombie tied up, the infected tied up in the back, Mailer.
Oh yeah.
And he's just like on a chain. He's like, oh, we're gonna watch him die and like see what we can learn from him. It seemed like a little bit not quite scientific and not quite as a learning exercise.
Good idea though, actually. I thought it was a pretty good idea. Yeah, because that's
a little
dark,
risky. Maybe put it someplace else where it can, and not just in the courtyard. Chained up in the courtyard.
Also, it seemed like a little risky to just walk out there too. Like if these guys spit or something, like the infected did not try to like infect others necessarily. They're just trying to attack them for whatever reason. But like he easily could have like on the chain. He was like almost face to face with them. Like if those guys would have spit or something. It seemed like there's a lot of opportunity to get infected by being that close to a lot of these people.
Yeah. Here's the thing. If you
no masks, where were the masks?
I thought about face shields a lot during this movie.
For sure.
I think they've like basically decided that, society is done. We're the last bastion. There is no, we're not reporting up to anyone else, and we haven't been able to contact anyone. It's us. And so now they're their own society. And this is after, 4-5 weeks? And they've said, they've just like written society off.
Yep.
That's fast.
Yeah. So they have a introductory dinner and there's somebody that was trying to make some eggs and the eggs are bad. So you get the sense that their food situation's a little sketchy. Major West basically admits that he promised his men women. And that's because he said that they were starting to drift towards becoming suicidal and just giving up hope and all that. And so that was his take. And so what you realize is that he's been basically just baiting people. Like that's the point of the beacon, is to pull people in to try and get some survivors, ultimately try to get some women. And so, and that whole... So
but
that
he it, wasn't...
What?
It Go was... Ahead. I know that it's totally... That's what he was saying, women are the future. But I think his goals, I'm not saying altruistic, but he was trying to like, hey, we need to continue society. Like it was a overly inflated view of like, we're the last ones there and we need women
exactly.
to continue the world.
Exactly. It's like, he's totally written, like, we're the last people on Earth now. And we have to restart, humanity. It's like, it's been 5 weeks. You don't know what else is going on around you. Like, really? Like
maybe it was a couple years or something. He's lost his shit a little bit, right? I mean, he's gone Colonel Kurtz-ish, right?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
He's Colonel Kurtz.
Totally. Yeah. Also, really? You're going to commit suicide because you haven't had sex in 4 weeks? Like, really? Really?
Well, it might have also been something about the whole collapse of society and all the rage zombies.
Again, he's not a very good leader, obviously, because there's other ways, you know, you instill hope into your people, right? Don't just say like, well, we're on our own now, boys.
Let's go get us some women.
Yeah. But yeah, I that was one of the other things I was thinking, like with poor Frank, you know, like he dies right before them. And it's like, ooh, you're just sort of going out of the frying pan and into the fire. Maybe that was a good thing, because what are they going to do to Selena and what's her name?
Hannah.
Not good. Well, they would definitely kill Frank in that situation. So that's, I mean, it's probably good that his character wasn't even around to see what the potential course that his daughter was on. That would
have been, been interesting, because he definitely felt more like a leader than the major.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There would have been a total power dynamic there, and Frank would have just been shot. I mean, that's basically what they were going to do to Jim.
Yeah, so they take Jim out. So Jim, the major, offers Jim an opportunity to join them after he says that, you know, they're basically keeping the women for sex, effectively, and potentially to repopulate society. But I think it's short term, just more about the sex. It is interesting, though, because they take Jim out and they take him to an area where they're going to shoot him. And what you see is it's basically it's an execution pit, right? So there are all these other bodies that are there, people that you assume responded to the beacon and showed up, and they were, you know, not going to be beneficial to the crew. They weren't either willing to commit, or they were not women, so they were killed.
You don't think that?
No, I didn't. I'm not saying that. I'm thinking about it now, possible. I just thought it was like where they dumped the other body. It could have been like the infected or whoever. That's just like their dump.
Yeah, I wasn't sure either, but now that you say it, I think you're probably right. Yeah. And I find it really interesting, because if you're trying to restart society, killing off, you know, like uninfected is not a good way to do that.
Right.
Unless you're trying to, you know, it's all about preserving your role in, you know, the whole power dynamic.
Right. Because you can't be threatened by anyone who's
a threat, you know, you're just going to take them out. But again, doesn't really help when you're trying to restart society.
Well, and also, I mean,
you need a little more biodiversity, I think, than two women and seven guys.
Yeah. Well, you also get the sense, though, that all of those guys, the ones that were there, you know, they were all pretty easily manipulated, right, in terms of to following the major. So that's the other thing. You didn't get the sense that, with the exception of the sergeant, who does actually...
Stuart McQuarrie.
So the sergeant who basically
gets executed
recoils against the idea, and then he actually is marched out with Jim, and he does get executed. One thing I like about this sequence is there's gunfire and things are briefly confused, and Jim ends up diving on top of the pile of bodies that are there, and so the soldiers can't find him, and they end up going away. I thought that was actually pretty cool. I thought that was a very smart move that
smart
Jim
move.
Made.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Jim doubles back to the mansion. At this point, by the way, the major has requested that the two women get into, you know, nicer dresses, because, you know, you assume they're going to begin the raping soon. I'm actually very...
The raping will commence in 15 minutes.
I have to say, I'm very glad that they didn't take that very far. Like, I did not want to, I didn't really want to see that.
Agreed.
The women are pressured by the soldiers for a couple minutes, and then, you know, Naomi talks them into leaving briefly, and she gives Hannah a couple pills, like a couple Valium or something like that, to hopefully soften the blow of the experience for her. That's kind of funny, actually, because later Hannah's sitting
there.
She's
stoned.
And she's pretty stoned, and the infected are running around. She's like, oh, yeah, you know, she's like, I'm feeling pretty good about everything. but that's one thing I just was thankful in this movie is I did not need to see them getting raped or getting it close to that. So thank you, Danny Boyle, for making that choice. I appreciate it. Yeah, and then so Jim gets back. I do like his approach to create some chaos, although it's a little risky, too, because he doesn't know where the women are, but he ends up freeing the infected that's in the courtyard, so he shoots the chain, and then that guy gets crazy and goes inside, and then basically it's just a matter of everything falling apart because the infected or they end up attacking everybody who's not infected, and it travels through everybody really quick. One thing that I do think is interesting about this scene, and I wasn't sure how I felt about it in the beginning, but I think the score is actually really interesting, the way that they use the score in this sequence, because it starts off, it's kind of slow, you know, a little melodic, and then it starts to sort of ramp up over as a single piece of music. And so I thought that was pretty interesting.
Now, I thought the score worked quite well, especially in this scene. It did. It kind of built up and like gets a little more frantic in a faster pace as it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then ultimately at the end, so Jim is able to rescue the women. One kill that does happen that's interesting is he has one of the, does he have the soldier or is it infected? I forget that he's driving his fingers into the eyes.
No, it was the mayor, I believe, right?
The mayor?
The major.
Mayor Goldie Wilson.
they elected a mayor at one point. We forgot to cover that during the progression.
It was a tight race. Wasn't it the major? I don't think he was infected. I think he was, he came in to like to take away Selena or something like that.
Anyways, it's another scene of some guy jamming his thumbs into somebody else's eyes.
Yeah. We had another eye socket kill.
We had one of those in The Descent. Didn't we have another one also just recently?
No, we were talking about it with the mountain.
Like there was one more. Oh, the mountain. Yeah, there you go.
The mountain and the viper.
Yeah. So, yeah. Apparently. Head crushing. Okay. Somebody do some research. How hard is it to actually jam your fingers into someone's eyeballs and push them back into their head?
I think it would also be like, pretty easy.
You think it'd be pretty easy?
Just like squash like grapes. But I don't know if you would be able to jam your thumbs like back past the orbital bone and into like the brain. I think that would be really difficult. But you could definitely blind someone that way.
Oh, yeah, you could blind somebody. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like he kills him that way, though.
Yeah, he does. He does. And then that's where like Selena thinks he's turned and she just like chops his head off or something.
Yeah, so why does she stop the swing? That's the question.
She's in love with him. So she hesitated and like he even says that he's like, oh, that was more than a heartbeat.
I just think at that particular moment, I think that if she's looking at him, I think based on her earlier approach to Mark, I think Jim's dead. I think Jim gets chopped.
Well, I think also Jim should speak up a little bit quicker. Like,
yeah, I know.
We haven't heard any infected.
It's like, whoa, I'm not infected. I mean, throw one of those out there, right? Instead of just being quiet.
We didn't hear any of the infected speak at any point.
He knew that she knew that she would not strike him down because she was in love with him.
And if he was struck down anyways, he'd return more powerful than you could possibly imagine.
That too.
Okay.
But Jim did get a shot in the belly. He had a gut shot. While trying to save her.
And apparently the original version of the film ended with him dying. So he actually, he died in the hospital or died from the gunshot. You briefly see like a quick montage of Naomi trying to, you know, resuscitate him in a hospital. And then it cuts to 28 days later again. And they're in this sort of idyllic setting somewhere out on the countryside. And they're sewing signs to leave out for some jets that are flying overhead. Because at one point, Jim does see a jet flying overhead when he's, I think that's when he's in the execution pit, which is, you know, kind of a moment, an indicator that maybe the entire world has not collapsed. So there is something left to fight for. So I think that ends up being a moment of inspiration for him.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like that bit of hope that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it sort of energized him.
Yeah. Yeah. But I have to say, I do like the ending. It's after, you know, watching this, the upbeat ending is very satisfying. It's nice, right? And it's also, you know, you're seeing very bright colors and it almost looks like it's filmed a little bit differently or it's the image is crisper than what you see in other
bright,
parts of the movie.
It's colorful. Very
it's daytime.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I read that there were alternate endings with him dying, with Jim dying. And I love this ending it because it gives you hope, right?
Yeah.
So I think they made the right choice.
Then I think we are on to the point where Colin gets to make his pick.
Are we going
to
wrap this? Are we going to, whoa.
Oh, well, okay. Sorry about that.
You get excited and, there.
Back up a bit.
Let's do some final thoughts, some letter grades.
All right, let's do, okay, ready? Final thoughts on 28 Days Later. Colin, go.
Good movie. Not super scary, but really well made. Probably one of the better or one of the best in the genre of, you know, quote unquote zombie films. I think it probably sort of re-energized the whole genre by giving us fast moving zombies. Well acted, well made. Just a good film overall. I would give it. I'm gonna give it like a. B plus A minus.
You always do this, dude. You got to make your choice.
All right. I'll give it B plus.
Okay. Marcus?
Yeah, I'll echo Colin. I think it's a really, really smartly made, almost artistic zombie film. Like, it has a lot of like subtext and has a lot of story to it. It's far more interesting than just like an action zombie movie. It's trying a bit more to be interesting and to have and more character study and how people would actually react and how society might actually react. So I thought it was really well done. Enjoyable movie. Definitely not a horror movie. I don't think scary much at all. Not for little kids, but it's just not a, it's not a scary movie all that much. But really well done. Really enjoyable. I would probably also give it a B+. I'll give it an 89%. Really solid. Well written. Well directed. Go see it.
Well, I think we're going to be very consistent on our letter grade, because I was B+ was what jumped into my head when I was trying to think about how I would rate this. I actually think it's a really, really well-made movie. I think there are several sequences that are, I think about the tunnel sequence in particular is one that comes to mind, that just the way that the whole thing is put together, it's very compelling. I think the way that it sets up the reality of when he first wakes up the 28 days later, and just how the shots around London and all that are just really amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's just some really amazing photography, and how they take that city and turn it into suddenly this abandoned location is just, it's super impressive. So just even watching those scenes, it just in and of itself is fun and interesting and really cool. And then going beyond that, I think that the overall story is very satisfying. I think that the characters and their actions are all very realistic. And so that feels, you know, that makes it very, makes it compelling. And you're very invested in the characters. So they do a great job with it. I think that this is not even, I don't even really consider this a horror movie and barely even a zombie movie. Honestly, this is kind of a more of a post-apocalyptic kind of journey film a little bit, right? So, or it's, you know, I think about it's, you know, Damnation Alley and Night of the Comet, Omega Man. Like these, this is more sort of the, those are the movies that I think
Incredible
about.
Journey.
The Incredible Journey.
No, that's Milo all the Notice. Dog and the cat. No, no, no.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I just, I mean, I'm very impressed. It's enjoyable. And again, the fact that it gets kind of dark, but it ends up on a lighter note with a true upbeat ending in this case, as Colin says, you know, not always something that you need, but in this case, very effective and very satisfying. So really like this movie. It was fun to revisit it, and I would give it a strong recommendation.
Awesome.
All right.
All right.
All right. Now we are on to the point where Colin gets to make his next pick for a movie.
Colin, what do you got?
What do you got for us?
I don't know. Do you want a comedy or a drama?
We haven't done a comedy in a while.
Comedy or non-comedy?
I would lean towards comedy, but it's your choice. We've done...
It is your choice, dude. Do whatever movie is in your heart at the moment.
Let's do LA Confidential.
All right.
Okay.
Just because I've wanted to do that for a long time.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it before too, so...
Well, I haven't had a chance to rewatch that movie probably in maybe 15 years, so I'm looking forward to it. All right, well, I think we are going to settle on LA Confidential right up until Colin changes his mind. If Colin changes his mind, we'll do an emergency Real DMC broadcast podcast update. So just to let everybody know, because I know everybody's hanging on every word from this particular selection for today. I think we are ready to wrap up our conversation about 28 Days Later. We all thought it was actually really good movie, well made, and we gave it a B+ and a recommendation across the board. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. Definitely worth watching. And with that, this is the Real DMC Podcast, signing off.
Come on. And
we're done. And scene.